All right, Bruchim Aboyim to the first in the series of Shi'urim on the Yud Gimel Ikrim of the Rambam. They're called the 13 Principles of Faith. And they appear in the Rambam's introduction to his commentary on the Mishnah in the last chapter on Sanhedrin, which is usually called, referred to as Perek Chelek. There the Rambam has a Hakdama in which he brings out several things which we're not going to discuss at least immediately. But he launches into the Yud Gimel Ikrim. I'm like, Yud Gimel is something that we don't have to give an introduction to. Everybody is all familiar with the 13 principles. No one really understands what they really say, but everybody knows there's something called the 13 principles, and everybody shows that all the some people are violating them and being called heretics. But actually, if we look carefully at what they say, we might discover some very interesting things that the Rambam has to tell us. I'm going to be using as the translation to Lashon HaKodesh of Rabbi Shilat, who has translated several Hakdamos of the Rambam, and we're going to be using the translation of Shilat. It appears in the Shilat edition on Daf Kuf Bem Aleph, and this is a translation direct from the Arabic. He's looked at all the different manuscripts of the Kisvei Yad. And since the Rambam actually annotated and made additions to the Yud Gimel Ikrim throughout his life, so the edition we have includes, in Rabbi Shimon's edition, includes all of those additions which the Rambam, in fact, actually made until the very end of his life, which will be important in some of them. Okay, now, first of all, just as a general, from a general thing, I'm not going to go into what were the Ikrim, what did Rambam mean by the Ikrim. Well, Mitzvah Shamim will speak about that at the very end of the Shi'urim, because once we speak about that, there might not be an end, and we might never get to the Ikrim. So we want to show we first learn the Ikrim, and after that we'll go into the historical dimension of the Ikrim, why was the Rambam appears to be the first person, at least, until a manuscript was found in Rav Sacher Goy a number of years ago, appears to generally announce the first person to actually to write and to lay down 13 principles, theological principles, which, according to his opinion, constituted the fundamental faith of the Jewish religion. Okay, now, the first three yesodos, three principles, the translation of Lashon HaKodesh is called the yesodos, as we'll see, are actually principles which the Rambam improves. In other words, the first Yisoid, which is the existence of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, the second Yisoid, which is Yehuda, his oneness, whatever that means, his incorporeality, and the third Yisoid, which is the rejection of any anthropomorphic description, these are principles which the Rambam himself says are subject to philosophical proof, and what is not, in fact, in need of any type of revelation to come to them. I mean, this is rather clear, first by the fact that in the Marin Havuch himself, and we'll get to him in a while, Rambam actually supplies proof, both of God's existence and his incorporeality, which basically covers the first three Yesodos. And in addition to, the Rambam says explicitly, in the second Chelek of the Marin Havuch, in the section which he devotes himself to prophecy, so the Rambam there says in Parak Lamed Gimel, I'm going to be using the edition of Schwartz, which I've used in all these Shulim and Ashkafos HaKodatkan, but in any case, anyway, there he says that which Chazal said, that the first two Dibros, the first two of the Ten Commandments, Anoichi and Lo Yelecha, that really says that they were heard by Pia Gevura, directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and not Moshe Rabbeinu, the Rambam says, is basically what Chazal mean, is that these things can be apprehended intellectually. And one is not in need of only nevuah, only prophecy, in order to come to these commandments. That's what the Rambam says explicitly. This is, once again, chapter 33, in the second section of the Bar Nevuchim. So, in other words, even though Rambam doesn't rule out prophecy, but nonetheless, the Rambam certainly understood that the first three Ikrim are actually three fundamentals which a person can come as a result of philosophical analysis and philosophical reflection. The fourth principle, which is kadmos, which actually in the ksavyat, which Rabbi Shemlock uses, actually the Rambam says explicitly, this is b'riyah yesh b'ayin creation ex nihilo. It appears to be that in this ikka, the Rambam held that one cannot come necessarily through philosophical analysis. Certainly, in the Moed of Vulcan, the Rambam does not prove creation ex nihilo. But the Rambam says explicitly, I'm now on Daf Kuf Mem Beis, that says, Ki yisoyed ha-yais, this is the yisoyed ha-yais of God, shall teras Moshe Rabbeinu. This is the greatest, most fundamental principle of teras Moshe Rabbeinu. The Rambam says it's the greatest principle of teras Moshe Rabbeinu. That means that, in fact, one cannot prove it philosophically. One is in need of revelation of teras Moshe Rabbeinu in order for this principle. So it's clear that from the fourth principle, the fourth yisoyed onwards, then already the principles are not subject to philosophical proof, but rather they are things that are gleaned from scripture and from revelation. But the first three yisoyedus and the Rambam, certainly the Rambam, in fact, offers proofs in the Moed of Vulcan, as I showed you, the Rambam certainly believes that these are things which are which can be gleaned from philosophical proof. Okay, fine. Now, what I want to do is I'm going to read the first Yesod.
It's from fourth onwards?
From fourth onwards, right. That's in my opinion, fourth onwards.
Even the voice Moshe Rabbeinu?
Yeah, the voice Moshe Rabbeinu, for sure the voice Moshe Rabbeinu, we require revelation. I mean, Moshe Rabbeinu hadn't revealed his nevuah to us, we would never know it. That doesn't mean it's not rational, but the Rambam, for the very fact that all the other mitzvahs, the Rambam says that we would not be able to ascertain intellectually, it means that the rest of the Aseret HaDibros and everything else is in fact actually from Toras Moshe. And that's pretty clear.
If the fourth one
yeah.
is not, I mean, if you don't, can't demonstrate it, right? So that wouldn't fuck up the first three?
No. And that's a misunderstanding of a lot of people. We're going to get to that in 9 minutes or so. Okay. That's a common misunderstanding. People, I think, are confused on this issue.
No relation.
Okay, but we'll speak about this. That's going to be the subject of the subject matter of today. Now, I want to read inside into the first Yesod, which is an important, and actually look at the Rambam. Of course, the Rambam, of course, wrote this in Arabic, so it can't be medayik in the translation, but given that, we'll try to be medayik in the translation. Okay? The Rambam says, I'm reading from the Shalat edition, Ayesod HaRishon, Metzias HaBorei Yishtabach, the existence of God. Okay, now, the Rambam says two things. V'hu sh'yesh sham nimtza v'oifen ha'sholom she'be'ofnei ha'metzias. There is something which exists which is the most perfect in its existence. Okay? Interesting expression. That's point number one. There exists something which has the most perfect existence.
It's interesting that he doesn't use the word laham.
I don't want to go into that. That's a title which has no bekor in the Arabic whatsoever.
Right.
Okay, now. But actually, doesn't say. Well, okay, now. But he doesn't. He doesn't say laham in oladas. And the Mishnah Torah says ladas. Right. But laham then I think is a poor translation of the Arabic. I believe I saw in Reb Chaim Heller's Sefer Mitzvahs that it also means ladas too.
So the whole thing's a red herring. There's a lot of Torah.
I know. Chaim has a lot of Torah on it. But anyway, whatever it is.
I think Kapach as well uses the term Ladas.
No. I mean,
in the Sefer HaMitzvahs.
No, I'm telling you, this Laham is, I don't know where it comes from. I mean, there's wonderful Torah from it, but I think from what Reb Chaim Heller writes in the Arabic, it seems that there's no basis for saying Laham. Okay, but in any case, but he doesn't say, here he doesn't say Laham and Ladas, but it's pretty clear that the Rambam understood there was a proof. Metzias abo yishtabach. So number one, v'hush yesh nimza bo'eifen ha'shom shebo'ofni metzias. Okay? So number one, the Rambam says it's the most perfect of all existences. That's very important. The existence of a Kodesh Baruch Hu is the most perfect, or the most shalem, however we translate shalem, of anything which exists. That's a very important point, which we're going to get to, Yitzhak Hashem, when we see Kant's critique on the Rambam's cosmological proof. That's number one. And number two, says the Rambam, who ilas betzius hamnimtzois kulam. The Rambam, Kodesh Baruch Hu, is the reason for all for everything else which exists. Uvo kiram betziusa, and it's the reason that things which exist continue to exist. Umenu nimshach hakiram. In other words, so therefore, we have over here two concepts. First of all, the Kodesh Baruch Hu, God's existence, is the most perfect of all existences. Right? And in addition to that, Kodesh Baruch Hu is that who determines the existence of everything else. Okay? So we have perfection and we have determinism. It goes on, the Rambam says, V'ilu ha'len v'datino istalkus mitziyusa. If we could imagine the God's non-existence, ha'yisa b'tele mitziyus kol nimsa. Nothing else would exist. V'lo ya nisha nimsa, and nothing else would remain to exist. Bilti toli b'tziyusa. And if, in fact, actually, but on the other hand, if we would imagine nothing else exists in the world, everything which exists, we would imagine, we could entertain that nothing else exists. But that would not affect God's existence. In other words, what were we to imagine that God didn't exist? Then, in fact, nothing else would exist. But what were we to imagine that nothing else exists in the world? God would still exist. Yeah. Okay, I think that's pretty clear. The fish who is alibilti zokut and mitzius lezulosa. That's the Rambam saying is that God's existence is not contingent. It's necessary. In other words, all existence, to use proper philosophical terminology, all existence, all things that exist are contingent. God's existence is necessary. Now, what we mean by things other than a kodesh baruch, other than God which exists, what do we mean? So, it includes the intellects, hamalachim, the angels, gom halgalgalim, the spheres, mashtakteim, everything below them, akol zok mitziusu elam. Everything is totally contingent upon God's existence. V'zai yisod harishon, and this is the first fundamental principle. This is the right fundamental principle. First fundamental principle of faith. Hu shemayra olam diber anochi Hashem. Okay, so the Rambam has told us, once again to summarize, very, very simply, is that God's existence is necessary, all other things that exist are contingent. But he's told us two things. Number one, God's existence is the most perfect, complete form of existence. That's point number one. And then the second thing he's told us is that God determines the existence of everything else. In other words, and the Rambam puts it very, very clearly, if we were to consider the possibility that God doesn't exist, nothing else would exist. But, of course, would we consider the possibility that nothing else exists other than God, God would still exist. That's what I'm saying, is that God's existence is necessary, not contingent. All their existence is contingent, not necessary. That's what I'm way of saying that. Okay, now, you asked this interesting question. You said, well, doesn't this mean that God created the world ex nihilo? I mean, that's another question. It's simple. In other words, once I have this proof, let's jump to the fourth, let's just say God created the world ex nihilo. And that's the obvious thing that comes to mind when a person learns this. But we're going to see, I'm going to show you actually now that not only is that not true, but that actually conveys and expresses a totally misunderstanding of what the Rambam meant in the first principle and what the Rambam understood for the existence of God. Okay, now, first of all, I'm going to demonstrate to you, that the Rambam's first principle has not only absolutely nothing to do with creation ex nihilo, but in fact actually is very pointedly not creation ex nihilo. The Rambam presents in the very first chapter of the second section of the Mishnah Nevuchim, the Gatz of the Plast, several proofs of God. I'm not sure what the main proof is. I would imagine the first proof, which is the longest proof, is probably the main proof. I'm certain that I'm not considered to be the least of his proofs. Now, before the Rambam begins proving the offering the proofs of God in the first chapter of the second chapter of the Mishnah Nevuchim, He has a hakdama, he has an introduction. And in that introduction, he states 25 assumptions. 25 assumptions are really 25 axioms of what you would, one would call Aristotelian physics or Aristotelian metaphysics. 25 assumptions that he assumes are logical, physical assumptions that, you know, everybody can agree to and understood. Yeah.
He claims that Aristotle has proven every one of them.
Right. As far as the Rambam is concerned, these are assumptions based upon Aristotelian proofs. In other words, these are things that we assume, and the Rambam, of course, doesn't go into them because the Rambam has already told us in the introduction to Myrna Vulcan that before one says the Myrna Vulcan, one should be grounded in Aristotelian science and physics. So therefore, the Rambam doesn't bother, you know, proving all these things. The Rambam assumes that you've gone through Aristotle's metaphysics, whether in Arabic, whether in ancient Greek, whether in English, and you're, you know, he doesn't have to prove that these are true. Now, but the Rambam, interestingly enough, adds a 26th assumption. Okay? What's that 26th assumption? So in the Swartz edition, it appears on page 256, and the 26th assumption, believe it or not, is the eternity of the world. That time is eternal. That's what Amnon says. Elanachot shekonmu, in addition to the assumptions which I've listed, ani moisif hanocha achas, I have added one assumption. Hamachayeves is kadmus ha'oila. He's going to assume that the world's eternal. And the fact is, I'm going to show you in a while, how the eternity of the world is very, very important for the proof of God. Now, you might say, oh, well, the Rambam, you know, basically, you know, you say the Rambam, when he wrote the Igor Ibrahim, didn't hold from this, he was only doing this for the Vulchim, but really, that's not true. Because actually, in the fourth principle, the Rambam actually refers, the fourth principle, which I told you, is already Kresh Nech Mielo, the Rambam says, right, that refers to the fact that he's actually contradicted himself. On Daf Kuf Mem Beis, after the Rambam tells us that the fourth principle of faith is that the world is b'chodesh, which means that Kadosh Baruch Hu created the world, Kresh Nech Mielo. Okay? So says the Rambam, v'zeh shetir'eini soyvev sviv inyan kadmusoy, and that which you see that I have soyvev sviv, that in fact I've actually, in other words, used or assumed inyan kadmusoy, God's eternity, al das ha-philosophen. Right, that does, is that appear in that Rambam there? No, because this is actually a ksav yad that Rabbi Kapach discovered. And actually, in the Shabbat edition that appears, you should also have the editions of the Rambam in the fourth Yisoid do not mention at all Briya Yeshmiyayim. You just say HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Kadmoyim. And there are people who have attempted to say that, in fact, actually, that in the Yigim Likrim, Briyash Miyagi and Krishna Seal is not part of the Yigim Likrim. Ah, the Rabbi mentioned Myrna Vulchim, that's a whole shtickle Torah that we'll mitzvah and get to. And they wanted to claim that the Rabbi held that really you don't have to believe in Briyash Miyagi. After all, the Rabbi already tells the Myrna Vulchim in section 2, chapter 25, that if you believe in Platonic's theory of eternity, then you're fine. You're not an Apikardus, it's fine to do so. And that's, by the way, one of the things that the Kuzari actually agrees on. Probably the only thing that Rambam and the Kuzari actually agree upon in anything is the fact that you could believe in Plato's theory of the eternity of the world. In fact, actually, the Rambam will be mashed like that too in the first.
Rambam also.
Yeah, Rambam for sure believed in it. I mean, he felt it was crazy to believe in Christianity. Okay, I'm going to go right now. I'm just saying is that so some people have tried to learn that in the. And the original Yigim Likrim, when the Rambam said the Kadosh Baruch Hu was Kadma, it didn't mean he was temporally Kadma, it just means he was ontologically Kadma. We'll get to that. All I just want to say is, Baruch Hashem, actually the Kapach edition, Kapach found actually a manuscript of the Rambam, I think Ksav Yod Kotshei. In fact, the Rambam actually added at the end of his life, B'riya Yesh B'yayin, he says explicitly, the Olam is B'chutash. So, make no mistake about it, creation is theologian is one of the Yigim Likrim. And the Rambam, but the Rambam points out that what? That you see me assuming the kadmos of the world. So he says, I'm just doing that to prove God's existence. So the Rambam actually was quite aware that his proof of God's existence And God's incorporeality, because we'll see actually the proof proves both things, right, does assume the eternity of the world and contradicts his fourth principle. The Rambam leaves it as such. We will speak about that.
You could repeat that one more time.
In other words, the Rambam, the fourth principle, makes note of the fact that he did make the assumption of proving God's existence and incorporeality, assuming the world's eternal, which is a contradiction to his fourth principle. He mentions this in the fourth principle.
Is the assumption of Kadmus HaOlam something that he couldn't have done if he assumed Bria HaOlam?
Obviously not. First of all, not only does he assume it, but the Rambam tells you to give him the Krim that he needs it. The Rambam didn't say it was Chayza. The Rambam said that's what people were not throwing.
It's not a Kal V'Chomer, as it were. If you can prove it with Kadmus HaOlam, you can...
No.
Exactly.
The Rambam is just saying, the Rambam is acknowledging in the Yud Gimel Ikre, that even though an Iker, the face that happened to be Chris Shakespeare, no? He used Kadmus, he assumed Kadmus in proving God's existence. That's what he says. Okay. Now, this seems to be a contradiction. We'll speak about when we get to the fourth principle. However, why am I speaking about this right now? This is very important. Why is it important? Because we should not misinterpret the first principle. Which means, to say that God is the cause of existence, that cannot be meant in a temporal sense. In other words, we think of causality as being temporal. In other words, A, which occurs at time t1, causes B, which occurs at some time after t1. That's called causality, temporal causality. Clearly, the Rambam's understanding that Kodesh Baruch Hu created the world, and created the world means he put the world, he caused the world existence, has nothing to do with time. It has absolutely nothing to do with time. So, in other words, we can think, well, what is this causality? It's not a temporal concept of causality. No, just because Kodesh Baruch Hu, right, determines the world, does not necessarily mean that Kodesh Baruch Hu precedes the world temporally. Now, this is very, very interesting, because it turns out this happens to be a very important theme in the Rambam in general. For example, in chapter 30 of section 2, the Rambam has an entire section in which he speaks about the creation of the world. You could say, literally, this is after the Rambam's Peirush on Maaseh Bereishis. And the Rambam begins with the question that how could you say Kodesh Baruch Hu, day one, day two, day three, when in fact actually the sun was first created on day four. Right, the Rambam goes through the version, but the conclusion of the Rambam, and if you don't believe me, this is by Rambam, look at the Abba Benel Sakhdama to his Tereshon version, is that creation did not take place in days. The Rambam does not learn in Maaseh Bereishis, that the creation took place first day, second day, third day. All the days, what the days are, is basically hierarchies of creation. The Rambam comes to the conclusion that the world was created all at once. It was not created in time. That's the Rambam's conclusion of chapter 30. And even though the Rambam says it very subtly, the fact is, if you look at the Abba Benel has a Hakdama to Maaseh Bereishis, and there he states explicitly that that is the Rambam Shita. Now, what you should know is the very famous Ramban. The very famous Ramban. The Ramban says, you should know, that the days of creation are real days. So everybody says, what's the Ramban saying? So that Ramban is a very famous Ramban. What's Ramban saying? Ramban is saying is that you should know that we have to take the creation was in 24-hour days, and therefore the world has to be 6,000 somehow years old. Anyone who says that basically doesn't understand what the Ramban is saying. The Ramban is saying that against the Rambam. The Rambam held the war in days. Come to Ramban, and they said, no, creation, according to Ramban, creation took place in time. So what the Ramban is saying that, lafuke, in contradiction to the Beir HaNebuchadnezzar. That's what Ramban is saying. And I always thought that was the pshat of the Ramban. And Baruch Hashem, actually, I mean, this shows I wasn't very careful, but Rabbi Chevel, Zechus of Lacha, says that too in his footnote. Then he doesn't miss very much Rabbi Chevel. And it still remains, by the way, Derech Agav, far and beyond the most important Perush of the Ramban and the Chumash, and, of course, the Achronim. And the Ramban, in his Perush of the Torah, comes to all, he doesn't mention the word of Uchim by name, but he makes a very strong statement. Dan, you should know that the creation of the world took place in terms of real days, from hours. The Ramban is just saying this, connected to the Ramban in the Moreh Nevuchim. So, in other words, what am I saying is that creation did not take place with time, within time. There's no concept of time in creation. So therefore, to say God created the world, that is a non-temporal concept. I could say a timeless concept, but I would say a non-temporal concept. Now,
well, at what point did time become part of creation?
We'll speak about that. Now, you should know something. You should know something very interesting is, now whoever knows a little bit about Aristotelian physics will say that this is a double postulate. This is a simple thing. Why is that true? The Rambam, in section 2, chapter 13, in which he presents the different theories of creation, in other words, the creation of Theonor, which is, Tehas Maisha, and then he presents the Aristotelian Platonic theories of eternity. The Rambam says that in creation ex nihilo, says the Rambam, you should know that time was also created. Why is time created? Because everybody knows that time is a property of movement. In other words, the Greeks actually believed something which is probably closer to Einstein's space-time than Newtonian physics. The Greeks believed that time was a property of motion. And since I assume that motion is actually spatial, the Greeks believed that actually there was a time that was part of space. In other words, and that's what I'm saying. Why did the Kodesh Baruch Hu create time? Because time is a property of motion, a property of the physical world. It's not separate from the physical. No, it's not separate from space. It's a property of motion. So just like Kodesh Baruch Hu created motion, anything moves. Thing that moves. So, therefore, he created time. Therefore, says the Rambam, you can't speak about a time that God created the world. There was no time that God created the world. That's what the Rambam says in chapter 13 of section 2. Okay, so it's a very, very important thing. So, what's interesting is that what we get in the Rambam is that God's creation of the world, or was the causal chain, which begins with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, has nothing to do with time. And to go even further, I can elaborate more further on this. If you look at section 2, chapter 12, there the Rambam says, well, how did the Kodesh Baruch Hu create the world? Because creation, like anything else, is a physical act, and how can we attribute to a Kodesh Baruch Hu a physical act? Says the Rambam, Kodesh Baruch Hu created the world through thought, through thinking. Kodesh Baruch Hu thought, which generated a thought, and finally at the end ends up in the active intellect, and that creates the world. It's a little bit like a creation, like the Rambam speaks, like he says, like throwing a pebble into a pond, and then they make circles, and make waves afterwards. It's a type of thing of that. It's a very, very interesting thing. But once again, thought is not connected with time. So what I want to say is that when it comes from this, is that to really understand the Rambam's concept that God created the world, meaning that God is the reason, the causal determinant of everything that exists, is not a concept in time. Now, that's very, very hard for us to understand. Why is it hard for us to understand? Because we're used to thinking of things in time, especially after Newton. But however, if a person thinks of, there are many things which we can say cause things, and they're not dependent upon time. But what do you think about that for a little while? But anyway, like this. Now, why does the Rambam need the eternity of time to prove the existence of God? Now, he does this in the proof, and it's very interesting the way he uses it in the proof. Once again, the first chapter of the second section of the Marina Vulcha. The Rambam says we know that everything which moves has to have something which causes it to move. And the Rambam says, so if we take, let's say, the last of the great spheres, which, you know, which movement causes everything in the world, what caused that to move? The Rambam goes through, you know, through all the possibilities. There are four possibilities. The one possibility is, it's another physical sphere that causes it to move. And that's true, then it just begs the question, okay, so what caused that to move? Now, one of the possibilities is that maybe this original causal factor that causes things to move has energy within it, right? It has a koach, which is contained within its body. So, and maybe that gives it energy to cause things to move.
You mean the world moves itself?
Well, yeah, the first mover of the world contains energy. So the Rambam says that can't be. Why? Because ever since every physical body is physically limited, and therefore the amount of energy in every body must be bounded, but we know the world's eternal. So therefore, how could a bounded energy contained within a bounded physical body have caused motion for an infinite amount of time?
If something is eternal, then it can't be divided.
No. Once again. That's in corporeality. You're confusing two things. Once again, if the energy within a physical being, right, is that which causes it to move the world. So the Rambam says, since the physical being is bounded, it's corporeal, if it's bounded, so the energy within must be bounded too.
Okay.
If it's contained within. So maybe that causes that's the first move. So the Rambam, that can't be. Why? Because if the world is eternal, time is infinite.
But how do we know the world is eternal?
He's assuming that.
That's one of the assumptions.
Right. He's assuming that. Since the world's eternal, so it can't be an energy within a physical body. Okay. That's one of the reductio ad absurdum. The Rambam admits that. And at the end, it has to be something which is incorporeal. But in other words, what do we see? We see that the eternity of the world is essential for the Rambam's proof. In other words, the eternity of the world, basically, right, is essential for the Rambam's proof because it requires nothing finite could possibly account for eternal, infinite motion. And therefore, right, the first movement cannot be corporeal because everything corporeal by definition has to be finite. So really, that's where it comes in the proof. In fact, what the Rambam is doing is an interesting thing. The Rambam basically is taking the universe and making it infinite. If the universe is infinite, then God cannot be corporeal. In other words, the notion of the incorporeality of God is contingent upon the infinity of the world. If the world is finite, then God doesn't is not incorporeal because he has a hole in him. Genus one, or genus two, whatever it is. He's a topological donor. In other words, so according to the Rambam, we have to make the world infinite. Now the Greeks believe that the finite world was the physical world was what? Was finite. So therefore, something has to be infinite. So what do you make infinite? Time. Time is infinite. In other words, we think, astronomers today believe that the world is infinite. But, in some way, whatever it is. But the Greeks believed the world was geometrically finite. So the Rambam was faced with the problem. If the world is geometrically finite, so I can't have a crater as incorporeal.
Why not? If the world is finite, why does that preclude the possibility of an infinite?
Because who's going to be, when you step outside the world, what do you get to? You step off the world, what do you get to? It must be the creator, if it's not the world. Either it's the world or the creator.
Right, so why can't you step off a finite world and get into the creator?
But then that means the creator has a hole in him. In other words, you're assuming a shape to the creator. The creator like curls himself around this finite manifold, whatever it is.
Why can't the creator be a non-physical cause of a physical world?
But once again, when you step outside the world, what do you have?
I still don't understand why it has to be a physical dimension.
Because, once again, if the creator represents the limit of a finite object, that gives shape to the creator. The creator has a hole in it.
Why must it be the limit?
What?
Why must it be the limit of the physical world?
Well, I assume, because if that's true, then make that part of the world. In other words, you have the creator, you have the world of the creator. You're not something in between. Something in between is either the creator or the world. So you define, if you decide the world stops here, the creator begins. Very simple exercise. So in other words, the Rambam had to have a way of making the world infinite. So how do you make the world infinite? What do? You make time infinite. So in other words, now that I know time is infinite, very, very good, the creator has to be incorporeal. Because there's an aspect, there's a dimension of the world that actually stretches to infinity.
Aren't you still going to have a problem of physical world existing in it?
That's a good question. It's mashma in the Rambam. It's in the Rambam. Somehow time is also a property of the world too. It's like another dimension of the world. It's not like this physical thing you step off and just goes on forever. Once again, it's not. We're used to thinking of time as separate from the physical, like Newtonian time. The Rambam doesn't think of it as such. What? Whatever it is, yeah. Time, in other words, we can't think of our terms of time. But the important thing is, that creation is not an act in time. And that's why, I'm telling you, that's why the Rambam is led in chapter 30, right, to come to the conclusion that in fact the days of creation are not really, have nothing to do with temporal days. They're merely hierarchies. I mean, the Chumash used the Lashon Yom, but really it's not a day. It's a hierarchy. And this is what the Ramban, this parasha of Chumash, is attacking. I mean, he doesn't mention the Bernabuch, because the Bernabuch says it so subtly, he doesn't have to say it. But nonetheless, the Ramban is saying, that you should know that the days are days. By the way, Derech Agav, you asked when does time come up. Time is fundamental in the Ramban. In fact, I would say, I would even go off on a limb to say, that probably the most fundamental ontology of the world is time.
In the Ramban.
The Ramban, time, if you're asking me what is the fundamental, the foundation of the Ramban's metaphysics, his understanding of God in relationship to the world, I would say time. I would say even more so, not only time, the circularity of time.
He also holds, Ramban also talks about the Yuli that's created.
Well, yeah, I understand that. But the nature of the Ramban is time. In fact, it's time. Yeah, we'll speak about it. I'm not going to write down the Ramban. I know you think you're just as free as Shiyan too. But you have to. This is something a tangent. All I'm saying is that when the Ramban says the world was created in days and time, the Ramban is. I mean, I'm sure people have the Ramban too. But the Ramban is the most noted Rishon to make creation and time a very, very fundamental principle. But this is absent from the Mordechai Vulcan.
So when we talk about the eternity of the world,
yes.
What does that mean? That means that there's always been matter?
We'll speak about that.
Why does there have to be, just back on to this point, why does there have to be a first cause at all if the world is eternal?
Oh, no, the Rambam proves it is a first cause. The Rambam proves it is a first cause, but it's not a first cause in time.
I'm asking, why does it need to be? We're going to talk about that.
No, yeah, right. Now, so what is the first cause in what? In what? Is that in time? Well, first of all, there is a concept of determinism of time. For example, right, logically, something determines something else logically. That's not a concept in time. For example, if A equals B and B equals C, then A equals C. But it's not a concept in time. I mean, I could take the two statements and I could, you know, say them at different times and it's still true. In other words, we know that, for example, logical relationships are not necessarily relationships to time or mathematical proof. In other words, you have assumptions, you prove something. That's not a proof in time. It is true that when I think about it, I first think of the assumption. That's not really true. Actually, sometimes you think of the answer, then you think of the assumption. In fact, many times what you do is you make a conjecture and then you think of the proof. Right, there are many conjectures that prove all the fancy. The Poincaré conjecture was proved, but Poincaré didn't have all the fancy mathematics that we have today. But he had the conjecture, and they proved it. So, in other words, that's an example of a deterministic system which is not a concept in time. So in other words, certainly, in other words, and usually that's called ontological determinism. That's a fancy word. It just means determinism is not temporal. In other words, things can determine things logically, for example, but it's not necessarily, you know, a concept in time. Right? So the Rambam understood that when a Kadosh Baruch Hu...
Logic is not based on time?
No, not at all. Not at all. Not at all.
You know, you have different steps.
But steps can all can take place at different times. The problem is that, you know, A equals B, I can say A equals B, A equals C, and B equals C. Those are all true too. They all, you know, that's implied too. It's not in time.
It's an issue of truth. It's not.
You, when you think about it, you think about it in time properly. But it's not true in time. I say I conjecture about the mass. You have to prove it. It's not a proof in time. I knew the conjecture, then I proved it. Or, for example, I might want to state something, then I want to find axioms which hold this is true, on the condition of which is true. So that's also not in time.
So truth is not dependent on time.
I didn't say that. I just say that there are certain types of truths which are not temporal. Some truths are. Or, for example, let me tell you something, even quantum mechanics, you have examples in which actually something is true at a certain time, and later on, it's not true at that time. But like a type of like time reversal. In any case, all I'm saying is that not every causality, quantum causality, is a concept in time. The Rambam clearly was not speaking about temporal causality. That's clear. So when the Rambam says that Kadosh Baruch Hu is the source, is the cause for things which exist, he didn't mean in time. He didn't mean in time. Not to mention that if we understand the creation of the world, the Rambam understood it in chapter 12, in section 2, that God is thinking thoughts. I don't think it takes God time to think thoughts. I mean, you know, even the biggest Eloi takes time to think something, but you know, the... So, in other words, what I'm saying is that when the Rambam says God is the deterministic reason for other things that exist, he's not speaking in terms of time.
Why is it cause and effect? Wouldn't it just be...
It's causal, but it's not in time. It's not in time. Like I said before, I give you examples. Yeah, you have logical things which you can look at causality, but they're not in time.
The English word of cause and effect implies time. It may not be in Rambam, but certainly that
word. Whatever it is.
Cause doesn't imply time.
Because if you reverse the flow of time, the effect would become the cause and vice versa.
I don't know. English, I don't know. But I'm saying, okay, now. So, in other words, what I want to get at the defining principle is that the first principle, right, the first principle does not imply creation ex nihilo. You need for that the fourth principle. And that's what the Rambam wants to say. Creation ex nihilo, fourth principle, is Teiras Moshe Rabbeinu. For creation ex nihilo, I need the Torah to reveal that to me. Creation ex nihilo is, probably a concept in creation ex nihilo from time, even though I'm going to argue that's not true. But in other words, when we say creation, at least if you think of it simply, creation ex nihilo is being creation in time. That is a gilui of the Torah, translation of the Torah, Torah's Moshe Rabbeinu. The Rambam here, right, is not proving creation ex nihilo. The Rambam is proving that God is the, quote, the logical cause, right, the ontological cause of the world, but not in time.
So how is it that the revelation of creation ex nihilo doesn't prevent the use of Kadmos HaOlam as a philosophical proof?
We will speak about that. There is many miles to go before we sleep. That's actually, not only is that one of the central problems in the Yud-Gimel Ikrim, that might be the most central problem in the entire Maariv Avoka. Because, I mean, much ink has been spilled on this. And we're going to get to that. The fourth principle is a gigantic principle, and it's very complicated. And in fact, actually, there are different versions, different gilsois of the Rambam. The fact is that based upon the Kahat Rabbi Kapach's manuscript, in which the Rambam and explicitly Krishna Ksilo means that it could possibly be that, in fact, people might have misunderstood it. The Rambam wanted to make it very clear that when he said Kadmon, he means Kadmon in time. Okay?
Once I make time infinity, how does that stop me from stepping out into
God? Because if time's infinity, so God has to be incorporeal. Because if he's corporal, right, then he can't be infinite. So something precedes God.
Why can't I have God being corporal without time being infinite?
No, because like we explained that before. Because if the world's finite, God is just a little bit more than the world.
And once that's something infinite, then...
I need an infinity in order to make God incorporeal. In other words, the infinity of one dimension means that God cannot be finite. He has to be greater than infinity.
This is a bigger infinity.
Right. Okay, this is pre-Cantor, whatever it is. But it's not important right now. In other words, in order to prove the incorporeality of God, which is really what the Rambam does, the Rambam's proof of God not only proves the existence of the incorporeal and corporeal at the same time. In order to think that the Kodesh Baruch Hu doesn't have a guf, right, is incorporeal, is echa, which is after the second and third of the ikun, right, I have to assume that there's an element of the world which is infinite. And the Rambam does that, right, by assuming the eternity of the world.
Why doesn't the creation of an infinite thing make a bigger whole than the creation of a finite thing? You're saying you can't create a finite thing because that means there's a whole in the big picture.
No.
If you're creating an infinite thing.
No. You have to draw it. No, the world is a whole within him. God just surrounds the whole.
Right. So why does that require the world to be infinite?
But if I stretch the world out into infinity, right?
Right.
So there's no...
So what's left of God now?
He's beyond infinity. He's incorporeal. If something's beyond infinity, it's incorporeal. In other words, I have this table here. So this table is everything that exists, so God just basically is the big blob that like covers around the table.
So what you're saying is that the supposition of a corporate world does not prevent the possibility of a corporate God.
Right.
It doesn't prove an incorporate God, but it allows the possibility of
right.
Whereas the existence of an infinite world requires an incorporate.
Right. I would not say it's stronger, but if you get that, it's good enough. I claim why? Because if it's a corporate and a bounded world, so what's outside the world has to is not the world, it has to be God. So therefore God has a donut. You know, the genus of topological one of God. That's what I'm saying. In other words, the world has to be infinite to assure God's incorporeality. That there's no way of getting around it. By the way, Derev Agav, you should know something. If you read chapter 13 of the Maimon of Vilchem, one of the arguments against creation ex nihilo is because creation ex nihilo means that there was a change. God decided to create the world. That's a change in God. That's a little bit of a kevyochel, a pagam in monotheism. Yeah.
Doesn't space also have to be infinite for the...
No, we spoke about that. It's a different...
I'm saying just so you say one aspect infinite, but...
Yeah, that's good enough. But actually, it's called space-time. Let's look at the space-time.
Oh, it's not just temporality.
Well, yeah, it is, the world's eternal for sure in time. Anyway, I think we're running out of time. Speaking about time. I might become incorporeal after this. we have 10 minutes to go? Okay, fine. Now, I want to now introduce, now that we have this... I want to now introduce actually the next topic, which I was also supposed to speak about today, but I think we might have to leave it for next time. Now, this is the famous proof of God. Okay? And people read it, God exists. But most people today, at least, I guess I mean most intelligent people, but many intelligent people today, not everybody's intelligent, right, are of the opinion that this proof, which is usually called the cosmological proof, the Rambam was not the only person to have offered a type of proof of this, was toppled in the 18th century by a philosopher whose name was Immanuel Kant. Now, Kant, in several writings, especially in his Critique of Pure Reason, devotes an entire section to toppling proofs of God. The most famous proofs of God, actually topples a lot of proofs of God, but the famous proofs of God he topples are what's called the ontological proof of God, which is actually...
This proof is the cosmological
proof? This is called the cosmological proof of God. And the cosmological proof of God. And what's Kant is credited with having been mafrich, all couple proofs of God, and that would probably include the Rambam's proof of God too. Okay, now... Whether Kant actually achieved it or not, there is debate. In other words, for many years people thought that it was a davar, it was a very simple thing, he undid the proof of God. But some of the literature seems to suggest that it's not as simple as it sounds. I'm not going to go into the pros and cons, what he did, what he didn't. That doesn't interest me. This is not a lecture on philosophy, and Judaism is not a philosophy. But after having said that, I think that Kant's critique of the cosmological proofs, and including the Rambam, will offer us very, very important insight in what the Rambam is doing. Because, you know, most people do not read the Moed Nebuchadnezzar and that believe in God. And those who believe in God usually don't do it because they read the Moed Nebuchadnezzar. But a common attitude of most people is that don't tell me that the Rambam proved that God exists. We all know that Kant came along and basically undid the proof. So, what I want to do is, I want to actually go into Kant's critique of the cosmological proof, and more so, how it relates to the Rambam, which is very important, because I think it will give us a tremendous amount of insight how the Rambam thought. Right? Already today, we've dispelled a common misconception the Rambam was speaking about causality and time. So that's out the window. But now I'm going to actually let you know that actually the Rambam was thinking completely different than we think today. Completely different than we think today. Because I think confusion sets in when people think the Rambam is thinking the way they're thinking, and they try to put their concepts into the Rambam, and they come up with very, very silly things. I would say probably heresy. To give you an example, a fine example I use is that the Rambam's concept of Krishna's theolo is that God created time. When he created the world, he created time too. So people say, well, the world was created X number of years ago. That's partial, right? If you don't believe that, you're an apikardos. You're a heretic. But according to the Rambam, you're an apikardos. Why? Because if you believe that the world was created X years ago, that means if X plus epsilon years ago, right? It was only God that was in the world. That means if X plus epsilon years ago, there was time, a time that only God exists. But how could that possibly be? There can't be time for the creation of the world. Therefore, you are an apikardos because you don't believe in creation of Sila. You're over on the fourth ikra of Yukib Ikrim. The Rambam doesn't tell Yukib Ikrim how many years the world is. The Rambam does say that if you don't believe in creation of Sila, you're an apikardos. So people who claim the world is X number of years old, in my opinion, I'm saying it publicly, are apikorsim according to the Rambam. They have no kind of get in the Papa. So what I'm saying is that what does this come from? It comes from a total confusion and misunderstanding of what the Rambam understood by Krishna's theology and Krishna in general. So Baruch Hashem, we're trying to be kind of people, that people should come to the true Das, right? The true religion.
You mean min, not apikorsim.
What?
You mean min.
Min, right, min, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. And I have a good story about that, but anyway. And because of this, and so actually, I think it's getting a little bit late. And what we're going to do is, for next time, we're actually going to take a look at Kant's critique of the cosmological proof. I think it's been put on the web.
Yeah.
And you don't have to be a philosopher to understand it. By the way, the critique is a little bit confusing. Uh-huh. It might take us more time to learn Kant than the Rambam, whatever it is. But I think that Kant's critique will actually show us a very interesting insight in what the Rambam was thinking. And it's going to help us understand why, in fact, that critique is not a critique. It's a critique, but it's not a rejection, a refutation of the Rambam. That's going to be very, very important. Okay? But until that time, from an undisclosed location in Yerushalayim HaKadosh, I go to Bach.